The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode. Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
no! It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3, KTAR.
And welcome once again to the Computer Corner. The data doctors are in the house, as we are every Saturday afternoon, to try to help you with you and yours when it comes to technology. Not just computers, but primarily computers. We can talk about PCs, Macs. We got Lewis from Mac Media here, as he is regularly coming in and trying to help us out with those folks that have Mac questions as well. So, got lots of feedback for you if you're running Windows or Mac. Digital camera, scanners, printers, smartphones. We'll try to help you with anything. iPhones.
Roombas.
Roombas, the vacuum cleaning deals, yeah, we got it all. So the premise of the show is that you, as you're driving around, as you're cleaning out the garage, as you're listening to the show, you try to learn a little something about your technology. And the best part is when you hear others talking about a situation and you hear what they did and basically you learn from their pain, you learned what not to do, probably more than what you learned what to do by listening to the show, so... Obviously, if you do have a question or a problem, the best way to address those things is start by using the old analog telephone line there, that old rusty wire. You can call us at 602-277-5827, 602-277-KTAR. If you are near a computer, you can join us online at datadoctors.com/radio, which will show... you all of today's resources, our Geek Speak of the Week, and a place for you to ask a question, make a suggestion, that type of thing. Feel free to do that. The best time to call, of course, is at the beginning of the show, 602-277-5827, shortly thereafter. Phone lines tend to get busy as, gosh, I guess a lot of people have a lot of problems with computers, huh?
It's
hence the show.
Unbelievable.
Hence the run of... Goodness sakes, where are we at? I think 92, 93 was the first year that I started doing anything with KTAR, somewhere in that area, right around the Michelangelo virus deal. So,
wow.
Maybe 15 years of, not doing it every day, but 15 years of our association here with KTAR, and we love it. Want to continue on?
You're an antique.
I am an antique. Oldie but goodie. I got the younger version of me here, my son Taylor,
who mini joins me. Us.
Yeah, mini, mini somebody.
I'm not mini me. I'm taller than him.
he's a bigger me. Or something. Mini me when it comes to helping people with computers, but you're working on that.
Yeah.
But you're going to bring the perspective of the youth out there, right?
Oh, yeah. Especially with the Geek Speak.
Geek Speak, that was a good one. It's right up your alley today. Today's theme, and again, we bring this theme just in order to compile information to try to teach you something new that you may not have known about. Today's theme is about encryption. The wild, wild, wild world of encryption. I think people that have computers... I've probably heard about this, but very few people actually understand what it's for, why it's important, how to use it, when to use it.
Or what exactly encryption is.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just starting with the basics. So we thought we'd take that. It's a little more technical than we normally take on, but it is, in today's age of everything digital, security, you know, that's the thing I think most people fear. When it comes to the things that they say and do on the internet, the things that they say and do in email. And encryption is really one of the best ways to help you control who sees what you say and do on the internet or through email or whatever you're doing in your digital life. So we'll kind of go through all those things with you.
I think identity theft is kind of a big subject these days. And
no question.
You see a lot of people that don't have anything locked down on their computer networks.
Their computers, their home networks, their email, their whatever. So we're gonna give you all of those tips and tricks and ideas and feedback as we go through the show. But again, 602-277-5827. Actually, I only have one line open. So if you're feverishly dialing and get a busy signal, then wait till you hear somebody roll off and then we'll get back into there. At its basic... core, think of encryption. I'm not going to get into the whole technical side and the 128-bit versus 64-bit versus whatever. Encryption is basically scrambling the stuff that you're working with, and the only way to unscramble it is with a special key. And so the key holders are the ones that can kind of decipher, right? Your cipher and decipher. You've got this stuff that gets scrambled around, and how to put it back together to where it's a useful bit of information is designated by who has the key. So probably one of the most common places where most of you actually probably are using encryption, and as far as our research shows, as we drive around the city here and look at open wireless connections, about half of you have gotten some form of encryption going in your life because you have encrypted your wireless router at home.
Well, that's promising. Higher than I thought.
Well, when we started doing this story, you know, 8-10 years ago, it was definitely a lot lower. But those of you that have taken the time to put in what's called a WEP key or a WPA key, basically you've got these different security settings on your router, you're actually creating an encrypted connection. And so the only way to connect to your router is if you have the key, which is that little code that usually it's a bunch of numbers and letters, depending upon whose wireless router you're using. But that's exactly what that does. That's exactly, if you've done that, that's how it works. You encrypt access to the router, and the only people that can connect then are the people that have the key. So if you keep that in mind, as we go through the discussion about all the different ways encryption can be used, that it's as simple as that. So the complexity of what creates the security is not important. How you use these tools is really what we want to focus in on. So those of you that really want to get off on having these, you know, really deep technical conversations about encryption and why one system's better than another, we'll do that off the air because it's going to be boring as heck to everyone else.
Yeah, you might have to save that for a coffee shop,
or maybe some other show. Like somebody else's show. That's just not my cup of tea. Boring! So anyway, that's how it works. And again, throughout the couple of hours, we'll pop in and out and talk in terms of encryption and how you can use it. I've got a great tip for you folks that use Gmail, especially if you use them in hotspots and coffee shops and out in public. There's a great little simple tip that you can use that'll make Gmail a lot more secure. But we'll save that for a little bit later in the show. We're going to welcome first to the show, Anthony. I think.
Hello,
Anthony.
Hello.
What's going on with your computer?
It's really acting really strange for the last few days.
Hey, Anthony?
Yeah.
Are you talking to me on a walkie-talkie?
No, I'm on a cell phone.
Oh, because it's really hard to hear you, and since we're on the radio, audio quality is...
Man, shoot.
All right, hang tight. You just hang tight there, because I can work through it off the air. So you just hang tight there, Anthony. I'll take you at the first break. That way we don't have to torture everyone else that's listening in Radio Land, but we'll still give Anthony some help. Let's see if Steve...
Hey, I'm here.
Hey, Steve. You know what, Steve?
Yes.
At the early part of the show, I always screw up, so I'm going to put you back on hold for a second.
No problem.
Because it's time for Carla Cruz to tell us what's going on and decrypt the traffic situation out there in the streets of Phoenix. Carla, save me. Helping you and yours with technology. In fact, I was helping Anthony to the point where I had to get back on the air here.
You almost missed it.
It is the Computer Corner. The Data Doctors are in the house, and so is Lewis from Mac Media. You Mac folks that have Mac questions. First, I'll take a shot at the answer, and then I'll let Lewis give you the real answer. We're talking about encryption, and if you don't even know the beginnings of you've heard of it, you don't really know what it is, we've got a ton of resources listed or posted at our website, datadoctors.com/radio, including what the heck is encryption, what's it for, and then some of the different ways that you might be able to use it. And we'll get into more detail later. Before we went to the traffic update, I prematurely put Steve on. Now Steve gets a second shot at this with an actual opportunity to ask a question.
Actually, slightly. A couple weeks ago, I called in. I was having an issue with my Explorer 7.
Yes. I remember you.
Yes, and I took your suggestion. I installed Firefox, and I want to tell you, just for all the regular listeners, it was just a brilliant move. I mean, My computer now is so fast and so quick and so easy to use.
You're talking about for the internet access?
For the internet access and doing email and everything. I mean, Firefox is just is lightning fast now.
You've seen the light, huh, brother?
Oh, I sure have. So I just wanted to follow up and let everybody know that it was just an excellent suggestion and it worked so well.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Steve. Well, the brilliant part, was the brilliant part that you did it or that we gave you the suggestion?
Well, I'll let you take the credit.
No, just to reiterate for those that weren't on the call at the time, something that it's a patent answer anytime somebody calls and says, I'm having a problem with Internet Explorer. Okay, do you have Firefox installed? And if they say no, we go into the explanation as to why. Before we get into the fact that it's a better browser, you know, everybody in the tech world has been using Firefox since it came out. And because it's technically superior in so many ways, and it's definitely one of the fastest, if not the fastest, browsers out there. And you can take some of the tips. I gave you a tip in the newsletter about a month ago about how to make Firefox even faster if you're on a high-speed internet connection by telling Firefox it's okay to download more than one thing at a time. So if you're just using it in its native form, go digging back in the archives of the newsletter and look for the tip of the week.
Okay.
And there's actually a way that you can change the settings in Firefox if you're on a high-speed internet connection to make it even faster, if you can believe that.
All right. I will do that. I'm on high speed. So.
But the real lesson that we were trying to get across is by having both browsers, it's the easiest way to determine when you're having a problem on the internet, is it my browser or is it the internet or is it the website? You have another browser you can go to, because if you jump into Firefox and whatever was going on in IE7 is not going on in Firefox, then you go, okay, something wrong with the browser.
Exactly.
If the same thing's happening in Firefox, you go, okay, it's an internet connection problem, it's the website that I'm trying to go to, it's something outside of the browser. And so you don't waste a whole lot of time on the wrong thing. Because a lot of people have a browser issue, and they call up their high-speed internet provider, and they complain to them about that, and they call their computer company and go, this computer's slow, but it turns out the browser's just been corrupted.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it saves a lot of time.
Well, I sure appreciate it.
Well, thanks for calling in, Steve. Did you have something to say on Fire? Oh, no, okay.
Firefox is a healing web browser.
It is. It is. And even in the Mac world, right?
It's wonderful.
Is it preferred in the Mac tech community over Safari, or is it...
Well, Mac kind of has that cultish following, so I think most people steer towards Safari.
Well, I'm talking rank and file. I understand that. I'm talking about the hardcore tech people.
Firefox.
Yeah, so the same thing in Windows. The Windows world, the hardcore tech people always use Firefox.
Yeah.
And the average users use Internet Explorer. Same thing with Safari.
Oh, man, I've seen the light.
All right, well, yeah. Spread the word.
Thank you.
All right, Steve.
All right, bye.
Take care. Leaves there. That opens up a line at 602-277-5827. It's always nice to hear. When something we suggested actually comes to fruition. Let's see. I'm going to check my time. Okay, I'm going to good there. Let's see if we can help. Is it Stick?
Yeah, that's my name. Yeah. Your call screener, he doubts it, I think, but it is my name.
All right. I love those names.
Yeah. Well, I got a question for you.
Yes,
I'm not going to tell you what kind of website I'm building. It's nothing bad, but it's going to help people.
Okay.
My regular computer that I use to surf the internet, I know I got this goose pimple feeling that it's not the type of computer that I need that I can use to host my website.
Oh, well, you don't want to host your website on anything that's going to have information that you care about personally. Okay, you never want to host a website on your own computer, because the very essence of a web server or webs, you know, something that can actually serve up web pages,
yeah,
is it's wide open to everybody on the internet.
Okay.
Like hack attack.
where do you go to get a computer that sits there and says, hey, I'm a big boy, I can take care of everything you want to post out there on the internet.
Why do you want to go with a computer? Why wouldn't you use one of the services that are out there that do this for next to nothing?
Well, I thought about that, but I don't know enough about it yet. I got the domain name, but I'm thinking, where do you go?
Where did you purchase the domain name through?
But my wife purchased it. I don't know.
Okay. There's a company, and I don't want to give them free plugs. There's a company, though, that is pretty world famous for their scathing commercials at the Super Bowl.
Well, no, I would never touch them with a 10-foot pole. No way.
Well, believe it or not, that's actually probably one of the best places for somebody that's trying to figure all this out to go to learn, because they have a ton of tools and things that do that. Now, there are a whole bunch of other companies that do a very similar type of thing. I mean, they're just one of the bigger because they've spent a lot of money marketing. So if you don't mind holding, I'm going to put you on hold here. And in the break, I'll give him some other suggestions. Obviously, he's got a visceral response to that particular company's, maybe because of the advertising or whatever. So, doesn't matter to me. We'll give Stick some ideas on what he can do to kind of get up to speed. In this day and age, it doesn't pay for you to try to do your own hosting and all that. There was a time when that made sense. Today, it just doesn't make sense. So 602-277-5827 is the phone number, or datadoctors.com/radio if you want to join us online. The Data Doctors are in the house to help you, along with Lewis from Mac Media, with all you Mac militants out there with their problems and questions as well. Stay tuned. Encryption. Gosh, isn't that an exciting topic? You cover this in school. You guys are kicking around the cafeteria at lunch at school all the time talking about encryption, aren't you? What's your name? Taylor?
We do.
You do?
A couple of my friends, mostly because the iPod touches and the iPhones and stuff. Mostly, a lot of the kids actually know what encryption is.
Of course, they know what it is. It's probably not
how to do it.
Biggest topic of discussion, huh?
It's a huge fad amongst teens.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah.
Dude, I got 128-bit.
Fuck it.
So, the whole point of encryption is to make it tougher for people that have no business getting into your business. For instance, most people don't realize when you send an email, emails are completely open text files that anybody along the way, not just the person you sent it to, could basically see exactly what you wrote in that email. It goes through a bunch of different mail servers. It goes through a bunch of different places before it actually gets to your recipient. And there's a lot of human beings that have access to a lot of equipment that can just, oh, that's interesting. Let's take a look at what this message says. So one of the most common places that people have started to use encryption is email. And there's a couple of different ways to do that. The most common way, if you're using like Outlook Express or Outlook or those kinds of programs, is to download a program that you use that generates a special key, and you give that key to people you want to send encrypted emails to so that they're able to decrypt your messages. And which means anywhere along the way, if somebody intercepts or gets a copy of your email, it just looks like a bunch of gibberish.
So where I fall short is I take that key and then I email the key to them.
Yeah, if you don't email it to them, then it makes it a little tougher for them to... But then again, it keeps your emails very, very secure.
Yes.
Nobody can read them. So that's another way. Now, I mentioned earlier in the show, there's a bunch of people out there that love Gmail. Gmail is a great free webmail program. It goes right in line with what we recommend for you to use as a spam control. Don't use your primary email address for everything. Use your primary email address for just the important people in your life and get a Gmail account and use that for all your online shopping and everything else because it's free. And if it just gets really loaded up with junk, you just stop using the account and go sign up for another one. It's a quick way to get rid of junk without exposing your primary email.
That's what my .Mac account's for.
Exactly. So, I mean, there's a bunch of different ways to do that. Just Gmail's become one of the most popular, one of the most full-featured webmail programs. Gives you the most storage, a great search for within the, if you're searching through your messages and what have you. But to get back on track here, Gmail, Hotmail, these others, when you go to log in, your login page is encrypted. So HTTPS, when you see that S, it tells you that it's a secured page. That web browser is now encrypting the information that it's sending back and forth across the internet. And that's key because if it's not encrypted, again, just like with email, people that are willing to do this can kind of see what you're doing and saying where you're surfing, that kind of thing. All of these email programs are secure when you log in. You'll see it says HTTPS when you log in, but as soon as you log in and actually go to your email, if you look up in the address bar, you notice the S went away. Huh? Now, that's because they were trying to secure the entrance, the front door, okay? But once they were in, they were like, okay, whatever. And if you think about it at home, no big deal. Here's where it becomes a problem. If you've got a laptop and you cruise around on public Wi-Fi hotspots, right, where you pop in, you've got your laptop, and you pop into your Gmail account, your Hotmail account, from that hotspot, if somebody on that same hotspot just so happens to be interested in trying to figure out what other people are doing on that wireless network, they can have software on there that kind of starts to intercept anything that's going on that's not encrypted. So here's the tip for all of you folks that use Gmail. whenever you're going to use Gmail on a public hotspot, these wireless networks where somebody else could be possibly monitoring and seeing what you're doing, when you go to do the login to Google's Gmail, you basically, instead of typing gmail.google.com, put in https://, like, so put that S in manually when you're going to the Gmail account. That tells the Gmail that during this session, I want all screens to be encrypted. Okay, and that's our tip of the week in our newsletter. But it's an important one for you folks using Gmail on wireless networks, especially if you're traveling around and you're on a hotspot. Just telling it with that extra S, when you first log in, you manually put that in. So https://gmail.google.com or mail.google.com. And I have the exact links and the examples in the newsletter. And if you're not a subscriber, you can go to the newsletter archives in the free help section of our website, datadoctors.com/help. Right-hand side, scroll down, you'll see newsletter archives. It's in this week's newsletter.
I've actually got a question. It's for you because it's Macs, but or not even Macs, it's Apple. But, you know how the iPods and the iPhones have the application, the mail application?
Mm.
Do you know if it's encrypted like that? Because it doesn't use a browser, it actually has the format.
Well, just recently, actually, I saw an article that said Apple was looking for a engineer that dabbled in encryption,
so that
for
basically
for iPhone, because people have been complaining about security with those types of devices.
I'm not aware of any other free mail webmail service that has this built in. By the way, the other tip that's on the site or on the newsletter, you can actually go into your Gmail account and say I always want to be in encryption mode, in secure mode. So the downside to doing that is that it's going to slow things down. Anytime you use encryption, it's going to slow things down, and that's one of the reasons why most companies don't preload it with the encryption in there.
But it's email.
Well, again,
I mean, how much can email slow down?
Yeah.
It depends on your connection and what else is going on. So just keep that in mind. So that's a way to manually do it, or you can permanently do it. So I think we're going to see people follow suit. But next time you're surfing the web on a laptop on a in a wireless environment in a public hotspot, understand, anybody else on that network could see anything that doesn't have that S, that HTTPS. Anything that doesn't have an S is plain to see, plain and easy for somebody else to see if they're motivated to do so. So
it's like locking the door but leaving the curtains open.
No, it's worse.
Okay,
it's
the window.
It's like having a key to the door of a like a Hollywood movie set where you get through the door, but there's no, like, walls around. You can just walk around the other side. And, hey, I'm in here. I didn't have to have a key. I could just come around here and wait for you to come through yourself. It's really kind of that wacky. So back to the phones here and see if we can help. Nancy, are you thinking that you might have gotten a virus from an internet site?
Actually, my teenage niece did. And my brother, in his research to try to get rid of the virus, saw that a lot of viruses come from MySpace. So I'd like any tips or tricks because now she's banned from MySpace and it's devastated her. So I'd like anything that you can tell me to maybe let her be able to get back on MySpace.
And how old is this individual?
She's 16.
Oh. 16.
Don't let her press the banners. Don't let her press the links or like.
Well, I was going to say, fortunately for you today, my junior data doctors, my son who's about to turn 15 and a bit of a MySpace fanatic, is here to give you his advice and maybe her the advice to do what he does to keep dad from going ballistic if he does something goofy.
After that, we'll give her a good number for some family counseling.
There you go. So MySpace tips for avoiding the garbage.
Basically, don't ever press any of the ads. Like, there's a lot of them that say, like, take this test to find out what celebrity you are. Those kind of dumb things that will actually... Oh. Chewing up?
I guess. Okay, well, hopefully she's listening and can get your advice. And if not, listen to the podcast afterwards for Nancy.
Okay,
back to it. Yeah, all of the ads.
Basically, all of those can actually, a lot of times, will bring Trojans. That's the most.
Well, wait a minute.
Of the time.
If I click on this and catch this little thing that's jumping around, I could win an iPod.
Okay. So, also, if you say a potato slowly, it sounds like gullible.
Really? So the bottom line is don't click on any of that stuff. The other thing that you have to watch for is any kind of attachments through, yeah, hey, check this out, kind of, or check this out.
Yeah, there's a lot of spammers. There's a lot of spammers out there. A lot of times people that actually get their MySpace is hacked are people that end up spamming it, or they'll put, like, advertisements and comments that people will click. And it's the same kind of thing. It's like, click this to see a video, or, you know, click this to go to the site. Or, and it's just, you can, they've actually got an option where you can mark those people as spam, or a lot of times these people don't realize that they're hacked.
Or someone that's phishing for your address list and looking for your friends.
Right.
Yeah, trying to get into your, yeah. The bottom line on MySpace is, don't trust anybody. These people could act like anybody. I'm a friend of a friend or whatever. And if somebody that you've never really met or never talked to, you don't have any relationship with, the first thing that they're doing is saying, hey, I'm so-and-so's friend. Check out this link. Check out this video. Check out this anything.
Never press any links.
That's a first sign that, if you're not paying attention, if you're just thinking, oh, somebody wants to be my friend. And, you know, let's face it, when you're younger, you tend to really... You're not as paranoid about people.
And actually, if it's an actual person and they want you to watch a video, generally they'll just put in the code, and then it'll pop up as a video little screen.
Within their page.
The links are just a little bit more of a pain in the butt. And a lot of people actually don't know how to make words into links.
Yeah.
So
that tells you all right there. Hey, this person knows a little too much. This, you know, man, I need to be cautious because... Normally, people don't do it this way. Why is this person doing it this way? And so it's just like everything else in email, on the internet. It's what you click on. You are what you click. And I have a quiz that we're going to answer on the other side of this break here for you and everyone out there listening. What do hackers, malicious hackers, and water have in common? And the answer
this
to that
is a really lame joke.
It's not a lame joke. It's an explanation why encryption is another good reason, or another good reason why encryption is something you should consider, because there is a similarity between malicious hackers and water. And I'll tell you what that is after we go through and listen to see what Carla Cruz has to see if the traffic is flowing like water or
it
not.
Is.
Is it? Hey, that's good news too. And welcome back to the Computer Corner. We're talking about encryption and how scrambling the information that you're sending or transmitting from a web browser or through email is a great way to make sure that eyes that shouldn't see your stuff can't. Encryption's a great way to make sure that people outside of your home can't connect to your wireless network without your permission. You have to give them the key. Before we went to break, I threw a little quiz out there about
what water.
What do malicious hackers and water have in common?
You know, even though you said it's not going to be a bad joke, I have this feeling in my stomach.
It's not a joke.
It's going to be lame.
It's not a joke. It's the truth. They both seek the path of least resistance.
Ooh.
All right? Think about that. When water flows.
Think about it.
Water flows, path of least resistance. Well, that's what hackers do. Why is that important? The mere fact that you took the time to put an encryption key in your home network means you won't be the victim. Your next-door neighbor that didn't take the time and is wide open will be the victim.
So they just flow on to the next.
That's right. They take the path of least resistance. And the reason I like to bring that up is there's a lot of people who get into heated discussions about encryption, about this one's still crackable and that one's still crackable. It doesn't matter.
If you got encryption, no one's going to
encryption, yeah.
Encryption.
Yeah, that's what they call it, encryption. That's geeks and nerds having a technical discussion about bits and bytes and zeros and ones.
Because they don't know how to talk about anything else.
Well, no, it's not. They're not thinking about the reality. If you are a burglar and you have a choice between a home that's got some level of protection, and even it's a chintzy alarm, but I got to go through the steps of disabling the alarm before I can burglarize the home, or this wide open home that has nothing.
Unless you're Danny Ocean, you're going.
Yeah, of course. Obviously, that's as long as there's not something really super valuable that you know about. But you think about most people that get attacked by an external hacker or malicious person, whatever. It's not because that person knows you. It's not because that person knows you have valuable data. They're just looking for easy targets. guess why, and Nancy was calling in earlier, guess why so many of these guys are aiming their guns at teenagers in MySpace? And it's the path of least resistance.
They trust
teenagers tend not to pay attention. They trust people more. They're not as jaded. And they tend to engage in those activities a lot more than adults.
See, he's calling teenagers naive. That's
yeah. Well, actually, there's
do you know any teenagers in your life that are not naive?
Actually, in that area, there's only I know less people.
I'm just talking about in general.
I know we're all naive.
Okay. Right. So, I mean, that's what you have to keep in mind with security. It doesn't matter if it's the world's best security or not. The mere fact that you put that extra bolt on there, that extra thing that makes it that much more difficult, they're going to take a pass on you. They're going to go to the next minion that didn't take the time to do this. And that's really the key here, is don't think that you have to become some techno geek nerd about encryption. You don't. You just need to start looking at the basic uses of encryption and making sure that you've invoked those in your life.
It's actually pretty easy, too.
It is pretty easy once you get past the, oh my goodness, I don't know anything about this, and I don't know what's going to go on. So,
follow the steps.
That is, yeah, that's my ranting and raving, if you will. Let's see here. Let's see if we can help Rick. Rick, you have a question about FTP server software, or is it a problem?
No, it's not a problem. It's some advice on your part, or maybe what you can help me with. I got with you a couple, 3 weeks ago. I made a choice. I think I found that it's best if I set up a server in myself, you know, within my business for handling file transfer between my clients, upload and download.
Okay.
Now, the software is what I'm interested in to run on this server. I've got the box. I've got the workstation server that I can use, but I'm looking for software. And do you guys have a recommendation for that? I'm looking at stuff like WSTP or WSFTP server software, stuff
well,
like
what,
that.
What server platform are you running?
What I'm going to do is Windows 2000, three server. I've got a copy of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, you can basically turn that into an FTP server. The question becomes, the issue is not, I mean, you already have everything you need to be an FTP server. The question becomes, how do you make it easy for your clients or whoever it is that's going to be working with you through FTP to actually execute that? You know what our solution was?
What's that?
We said, we're not going to use anything that looks like FTP software, so it's not confusing.
Okay.
So basically, the issue is, the primary reason you want to use FTP is to be able to send these large files, right?
Exactly.
Back and forth. Well, I mean, we wrote our own code because we have our own intranet. But basically, we just have a little simple interface that basically walks them through, you know, where's your file, and they click on browse, and they send those files up through through FTP, which they don't realize they're doing, to us. And we just get that. We get a little email saying this file's ready. So I don't even have to go to the FTP server or anything. And the reason I'm bringing this up is there's a whole bunch of free services out there that will allow you to do that without you having to go through all this mess right now. It costs you zero.
Are you talking about like big transfer
files? Yeah, transfer big files, any of those things. They're going to get those files from your clients to you without any of this hassle and, you know, cost and all of that stuff.
Okay, well, you know, this is like just going to be on the business side where clients will send me things and I send things back.
Yeah, no, I understand. Hang on, I'm going to talk to you off the air and get you some more on that. It's the Computer Corner. It's Ken and Lewis and Taylor. We've got another hour to go. Encryption, encryption, encryption coming.
The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode.
Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
no! It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3, KTAR.
And welcome back to the Computer Corner. It's hour number two of the encryption extravaganza.
You keep getting it pretty close.
Which part?
The being on the phone until like 15 seconds after the music starts playing.
You think after 15 years I'd figure out that there's breaks and then there's not breaks. And try to help as many people as we can. It's just how it works. We've been discussing the pros and cons, the ups and downs, and the do's and don'ts of encryption. Think of encryption as simply a way to scramble the information that you're, and again, this is a very simple explanation, but it basically scrambles the information that you're working with so that only those that have the key to unscramble it will be able to see what you were trying to say or do. And again, I think people are completely clueless on how much of what you do on the internet is completely exposed and open and available for folks anywhere along the way to see what you're doing. We talked earlier about if you're in a coffee shop on a public hi-fi. Going back to my audio days. public Wi-Fi, public hotspot, where anybody can connect their laptop to a wireless network. Well, that's all free-flowing, kind of open in the air, and anything that does not have that S, that HTTPS, is not encrypted and therefore viewable by anybody else that's in that coffee shop if they're so motivated and have the tools and the desire to do so. Same thing with your email. There are a plethora of programs. There's one in particular. It's a free tool. It's called TrueCrypt. That here's another area of today's technology. It didn't exist back in the day that you got to be concerned about. Those little wonderful little thumb drives, those flash drives. Right? They can hold how much stuff now? I mean, just we're talking about
gigs and gigs.
Exactly. I mean, 20 megabyte hard drives were like big when I got started in the industry. So it's just overwhelming to think about this little tiny gum stick that has all this information.
I've got one now that's 32 gig.
Yeah, they're just ridiculous. Now think about that, though. What happens if you lose? And let's face it, the smaller this stuff gets, the easier it is to lose. I mean, I don't know how many flash drives I've lost already. Fortunately, I don't keep anything of sensitive
material
on there, but still, it'd be nice to be able to protect what I have. So that's another area where you may want to consider using encryption. If you encrypt that drive, and you can either buy them with special encryption, hardware encryption,
yeah,
on them, and I've got a link to a company that does that, or you can download this free program that's in the links called TrueCrypt and actually encrypt it yourself. Create an encrypted container within that flash drive, and then anything that you place in that container is encrypted, which means the machine that you plugged it into that created it is the only one that's going to be able to read it unless you install TrueCrypt and give that key to another computer. So it's a very secure way of making sure that if I lose this, they'll wipe it out and they'll still use it for a flash drive, but at least I don't have to worry about my data.
Well, a lot of companies are worried about sensitive data coming from their internal computers and then people putting information on flash drives and taking it out.
Yeah, in those cases, I mean, we're trying to explain the risks to our business customers. And in a lot of cases, we're explaining to them that it might be the best strategy to go into the BIOS and the hardware level and disable those USB ports.
Sure.
Especially if they're machines that are connected to a network, so you don't need to have a printer directly plugged in. You don't need anything that has to plug directly into a USB port. Disable them. Use the old school keyboard, old school mouse. Print through the network and lock down those USB ports, because that's one of the easiest ways for people to take large amounts of data.
There's nothing like your accounting information walking out the front door.
What about your, you got somebody coming in doing cleaning?
Sure.
Housekeeping. They pop in and,
housekeeping.
Housekeeping. I don't want to get to people too paranoid about it. But again, if you take these steps, that it just kind of helps you with just about any of these scenarios. On our website as well, datadoctors.com/radio, in addition to what the heck is encryption and how does it work, there's pros and cons of full disk encryption. There's a link to the BitLocker drive encryption that comes with Windows Vista. And Windows XP Pro users also have the ability to secure files through encryption. Windows XP Home folks, you don't have that built in. You would have to download a third-party program. And again, TrueCrypt is up there for those of you that don't have anything. Check out all those links there, datadoctors.com/radio. One line open, 602-277-5827. Let's see here. I believe Harry was next. Harry, you have a problem with Vista and the SpyBot program, or SpyBots in general?
Well, SpyBot program.
The free download?
Yeah.
Okay, what's going on?
First, I want to talk about, you talked about thumb drives and encryption.
Yes.
I happen to have all my passwords encrypted with WinZip 256-bit encryption on my thumb drive.
Well, there you have it.
So, and every program I've tried so far, they said, what's this? Because it wasn't WinZip, it was trying to open it.
Right.
Anyway, Vista RC1, release candidate 1. I happen to have a copy here. I bought myself a quad processor AMD, and as soon as I tried to install it, one of the first things it says is it's looking for a driver, and I don't have any kind of RAID or anything else going on.
You're talking about spybots looking for a driver?
No, I'm sorry.
You're switching gears on me.
Well, okay, let's go spybot then.
Okay.
I just loaded the newer version of spybot, and during one of the searches for garbage in there, it got turned off. And now every time I turn on my computer, Windows Explorer comes up in the spybot folder. And I don't understand why. I've been going through the registry trying to find any kind of startup that indicates that it should be starting, and so far not finding anything.
And it's not starting SpyBot, the program. It's just
starting Windows Explorer.
Yeah, it sounds like some startup key somewhere got confused about what it's supposed to be doing, you know, at launch. So it sounds like a simple fix once you find it. You're looking in the right areas. Yeah. You know, without seeing the machine, I really couldn't tell you much more than that. The other thing you can try doing is, you know, post a question on the support section. There's a pretty active forum and support area of the SpyBot website.
I think this is one of the newer versions, too old, and maybe it still has a small little... Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, just check that out. That might be a way to go there. So, yeah. Okay, so now we've shifted out of first gear. Let's get into second. What was the other question about?
Okay. I have a copy of Vista RC1, Release Candidate 1.
Okay.
That I'm trying to load onto an AMD quad processor and hard drive, vanilla. And it almost immediately comes up and it says it's looking for some kind of a driver, but it doesn't tell me what kind of a driver it's looking for.
Well, if it's during you're doing the initial install,
yes, sir.
Okay. Generally speaking, you have to have the drivers for the motherboard and all of the components that are embedded on the motherboard.
But you don't usually install those until after you've installed the operating system, don't you?
Well, it really depends on what it's seeing. If it's basically running into a piece of hardware, just you're assuming that Vista is going to recognize your hardware. Obviously, it's not.
All right.
So it's running. You may have a compatibility issue here.
What you're suggesting is something I've never done before: is load the disk that came with the motherboard first.
No. You know what? This is getting really, really interesting for nobody. I'm going to put you on hold a second. I'm going to take you off the air because I can do that. And we're going to go to Carla Cruz to find out more interesting information about what's going on with traffic. Carla. And welcome back to the Computer Corner. We have been interesting when we bring fairly technical topics to the fore. You get a lot more technical types calling in. So I guess that's good. That means the subject matter actually has some...
effect on the show.
Apparently.
Yeah, you're drawing some interest.
Something. So, again, we mentioned our newsletter earlier, and one of the things that we have in our newsletter, as well as a primary component of this show, is the Geek Speak of the Week, and time for that segment of the show where we bring a new word that's... it's floating around. It's kind of in the vernacular of the technology world or the youngsters out there that are using everything that has a button on it. Try to teach the rest of us what the heck these words mean. So, Taylor, you want to take this week's Geek Speak of the Week?
Sure, I guess. Second week in a row.
Sure, go ahead. I got it up on the screen just to help you.
There we go. You're a good person.
Yes, I am. Okay.
He forgot where he was.
Yeah, I know.
Nice and slow. It is.
Text
expectation.
There we go. I can't speak words.
It's expectation of
with a T.
Right. Well, text expectation. It's spelled very, very strange.
You pretty much trip over yourself.
You mash two words together, text and expectations. And what does it mean?
It means I can't read from here. You know what? You go ahead and do this.
It's what you do every time you send a text message to somebody and you're anxious to hear what they have to say back.
So, like, when I imagine that there's a vibration in my pocket and there's not?
Yes, and you're constantly jumping to see if somebody texted you back because you're anticipating?
Yeah.
That's an indication. That's a symptom of textpectation.
I get that a lot.
This is real?
This is real.
Unbelievable.
What do you mean it's real? It's, of course it's real. You don't have teenagers in your house, do you?
Not yet.
These kids live in a constant state of textpectation.
No, but I do have employees.
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah.
So now you can hit them with that, and they're going to go, what? What do you say? You're gonna be the guy bringing the new word.
No, I'll be writing that up on citations.
There you go. Massive textpectations.
No more than three flips per minute.
Back to the phones here. Gladys, thanks for holding so long. It says here, Flash Player.
Yeah.
Don't know what that means, but I'll see if we can help you.
Oh, it's the Adobe Fast Player that recommended that we upgrade.
Well, you have no choice if you're going to use stuff on the internet. You got to have that Flash Player these days.
Oh, yes. Well, I had the 7, and my problem is that it comes up as Install Flash Player 9UB instead of, and that's how it's sitting in my, and I can't get rid of the installer.
Well, there's when you download something from Adobe or any other website, that does not install it into your computer. That simply takes the program and moves it, a copy of it from their web server onto your computer.
Okay.
So that EXE file you're talking about?
Yeah, I already had 7.
Well, that doesn't matter.
Okay.
This is the installation program to get you upgraded.
Okay.
So that EXE file you just listed off?
Uh-huh.
Have you actually run that?
Yes, at least 4 times, and it says to turn off the browser, and I turn off Safari and do it, and it's still there.
Well, the file is going to remain there after the installation, because when you're done with it, you just drag it over to your recycle bin. Unless I'm mistaken about what you're explaining. Is this like on your desktop?
No, in the applications folder, it says install Flash Player. So if I...
Is this a Mac or a PC?
Yeah, it's a Mac, 10.4.11.
Okay.
And any other time, you know, you install and that part goes away, but this Vice X 3.0 keeps showing up and wanting to be installed.
Well, you can continue to install it till your heart's content, but it's basically installing the same thing over and over again.
Right.
So it's probably on there already, and you can just throw that file in the trash.
Which one?
The installer file.
I can't get it away from the... It's like hooked to...
Maybe we can take her off the
air. Yeah, okay. Hey, God, Gladys. This is one of those impossible to help without seeing kind of deals. But we're going
to
give it a shot off the air.
I'll talk.
Gladys, hang tight. The Mac Media.
Mac Medic's old school.
I know. But you are, you know, I'm the data doctor, you're the Mac Medic, right?
There, you
like that.
There you go.
It is the Computer Corner. We've got another half an hour to go. Please join us online, datadoctors.com/radio. You'll see all of the offerings today on today's theme about encryption, about all the different ways you can use it, some of the tools, some of the free downloads, some of the stuff that's already built into Windows that you may not have known about. Check all that out, and then when we come back, we're going to answer some more questions. 602-277-5827. And we have been getting jiggy with it, haven't we?
Yep.
With it being encryption, right? And if you want to join us online, datadoctors.com/radio, you can see the various resources that we've posted and links that you can learn more about encryption and what's installed already in the systems or devices that you already have, like wireless networks and email and those kinds of things, and which items you might have to download a third-party application for. And of course you can call in 602-277-5827. We got about 25 minutes left. We'll see how many calls we can get in. Let's go to Dan, who it says on here, desktop overheating.
Yes, hi.
So this would be the opposite of what a lot of people call about, which is my computer's frozen.
Well, I don't know which is worse. I purchased this Hewlett Packard Pavilion Slimline last year in July.
Okay,
so
well,
that's a year old.
That right there, the fact that you bought a Slimline. Let's just dig into that a little bit, okay, Dan?
Got a pretty good idea of what you're going to tell me. Would you like to hear my story of Walt?
Sure.
Okay, in October, it started overheating. It had blown out a lot of hot air out of this thing, and I called Hewlett Packard, and of course ended up speaking with someone in India.
Yes, my friend.
And they told me that it was under warranty. They would take care of it, and I was very happy to hear that. And they told me that they would send me a box so that I could put the computer in the box and send it back to them, and they'd take care of it.
Now, that's customer service.
Yeah, boy, I'll tell you. It's a really warm, cozy feeling that you get. Anyway, I said, well, I didn't really expect that I'd get an empty box, but I would like someone to come to my home and take care of this. And he said, well, you don't have the extended warranty. If you had the extended warranty, we would be able to do that. And I asked him if I could buy the extended warranty right then and there, and he said yes. So I bought the extended warranty, and I think around $150 for a 2-year extended warranty.
Okay.
So by doing that, he arranged to have the motherboard sent to me, Federal Express, and had a service person pick it up at FedEx and brought it to my home, installed the new motherboard, and everything was fine from October until April. April, same thing happened. I called again. They did the same thing, had the person come out and service it and exchange the motherboard, and everything was fine until last month, June. Same problem. They had the motherboard sent out, the service
Dan,
person
hang on,
out.
Hang on. Let me ask.
Installed it, but apparently it was a defective power supplied, or something was defective, and the service person contacted them and told them about the problem, and then they put me in touch with what they call a Hewlett Packard case manager in Canada. And I thought, boy, that's refreshing. The man actually speaks English, and I could understand him. And we talked about it, and he said that I had to send the computer back to them, and they would bench test it and correct whatever the problem was and send it back to me. They did that. I received the computer back. It did, in fact, power up. They sent me a checklist.
Dan, there is a finite limit to how much time we have on the air here. Could we get to...
But they did replace the motherboard. I have it back. It turned it on, and, of course, it's just pouring out heat.
Okay.
Excessive amount of heat. I bought a small fan to put down in that area under my desk, which is all wide open, a lot of circulation anyway. And all that fan is doing, an external fan, of course, is just blowing all the...
moving the heat.
That's coming out.
Okay, well,
of
let's dig into a few things here.
Oh.
When you first called, they determined that it was a motherboard issue over the phone with no technician.
Yeah.
Okay. Did they say it was because they know of an issue with this particular unit? It has a tendency to do this. That's why we're going to send you this motherboard. Did they talk about that?
No,
okay.
Not at all.
So that's one of two options. One, you had somebody that was fantastic from the other side of the world that can't see your machine, never diagnosed and everything, and boom, renew right away that you needed a motherboard. So they either misdiagnosed that,
or they had some track record,
or they had something that said, you know what? Now let's the slimline thing.
Yeah.
People hear that, they may not know what that means. What does that mean when you buy a slimline computer?
It means that I bought a tower that is very small and compact, and everything inside of it is on one thing on top of another, and there's not a lot of room for air circulation.
Right, and probably not as many fans as what today's computers generally require, because video cards now generate heat. You got your processor generating heat. You got memory chips now generating a lot more heat than they used to because there's so much more of it. And, of course, the power supply itself. So anytime you buy a slimline, what may seem like a good idea, that extra space actually comes into play pretty spectacularly, because heat is one of the biggest enemies. Heat and dust and stuff of that, you know, the stuff that makes your computer components run at a much higher operating temperature. Those are all killers for electronics, okay? So the bottom line is, it sounds like, based on your experience, you bought a pig in a poke.
Yeah, it's a very poor design, and
right.
I've talked to a few other people at Best Buy and different places that are computer savvy, and they all say, yeah, the slimline runs hot.
Yes.
It's not uncommon to hear this.
Yeah, but how many times have you had the motherboard replaced?
3.
Okay. So the only thing that I can tell you that you're going to get from this conversation today, because I'm not really sure what the question is...
Well, I called Hewlett Packard again yesterday to talk to the person that I've been assigned to in the...
Okay, but Dan, what's your question?
Manager, so to
what's
speak.
What's your question?
And he wasn't in yet, and a girl that I spoke with said, well, he'll be in 15 minutes, and I said, please ask, have him call me.
Dan?
He said,
Dan,
he wouldn't,
Dan,
of course, I never
Dan,
heard from Hewlett Packard at
time
all
out,
yesterday.
Dan, time out. What's your question?
what do I do from here? Is there someone that I can contact that is over and above this Hewlett-Packard case manager?
I mean, I would talk to customer relations.
I asked that question yesterday when I called in, and they said, no, he's the only person you can talk to.
Well, then, you know, if you've gone up the channel, then you can go around the channel and get online and start looking for direct corporate phone numbers and things of that nature. But at the end of the day, here's the reality. You're one customer with one computer for a huge, huge company. Okay, so you're going to be up against a battle to get anybody to take your case separate from all the other cases that are very similar to this. So take that into consideration as you move forward and make decisions about where you buy your next computer and how and the fact that every computer out there is going to have a problem. It's going to break. So really, I think after all of this, I think what you can share that's going to help everybody listening, which is really the point of the show, is it's not what you buy, it's who you buy it from. And what happens, not if, but when it breaks. This is something that nobody seems to want to spend the time learning before they make a purchase. And then once they're in it, I mean, once you've been, you know, you're cornered with these folks, there's nothing you can do, right?
I'm stuck.
You are stuck at this point. And unfortunately, because you bought a Slimline, it's even worse because it's all proprietary. It's not like you can start buying generic parts off the shelf and replacing the stuff that's junky. You have to start all over again.
Someone told me that I could probably take this Slimline and have it put into a larger open...
No. You'd have to replace the motherboard.
Power. That would kind of solve the problem. But no. I'm not really sure that would do it because, of, you know, the fan is going to have to be increased in size and
Dan,
probably a few other things.
Dan, we got to get going here. But the only thing that you're going to be able to pull out of Slimline that's going to go into another computer is the processor, the memory, and the hard drive. Everything else is going to have to be replaced. You're basically talking about a new computer. So if you want to try to get satisfaction from the folks that sold you the computer, you have to keep banging your head against the wall. You're going to have to get creative about how to get to somebody higher than the guy you talked to or go straight from the corporate side and work down. Yeah, I mean, that's about all you can do.
Is that my best option, is to go where I bought it rather than...
No. Where you bought it...
...is going to take care of me?
Where you bought it, they're going to say, we're not the manufacturer, you have to go to HP. You have to go to the manufacturer of the product.
That's exactly what they told me. Yeah.
Well, Ken, and it sounds like he's talking to customer service, not customer relations. And customer relations is another tier, and they have more power to replace that machine.
Yeah, so go to the HP website and start looking at all the different contact areas and start making phone calls. You know, even if you call the wrong number, say, here's my situation. Customer service is not helping me. What other options do I have? And just keep pounding on them until you get some satisfaction.
I'll do it.
All right?
Thank you very much.
Hey, Dan?
Yes?
Hey, when you call back, be a little more concise, man. I only got so much time on the show.
Sorry.
Thanks, man. Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. It's almost like he was talking on something that he couldn't hear while he was talking.
Well, he's frustrated.
I don't know, but I mean, he literally couldn't hear me saying time out.
Well, you were holding your hands up.
Oh, that's what it was. I forgot, this is not television. This is radio. Remember that, T. T. Time out.
Lowercase.
If you're not a subscriber to our newsletter and you want a little more information, for instance, I set out a little email scam that almost fooled me, as a matter of fact, which it's been a long time since I've gotten something in my inbox that actually almost got me to open the attachment. And it was basically because we're booking airline flights and we're getting these confirmations, and I got a confirmation from an airline, and I thought, okay, my wife just booked me on something. What did she book me on, and what's going on? And without really thinking about it, I started opening things, and as I look at it, it's like, that was very cleverly done. What a great time to be sending out scams about airline confirmations.
Do it in vacation time.
Everybody's booking airline, you know, for this, that, and the other, and sure enough. So I put that example in this week's newsletter. If you're not a subscriber, you can subscribe, datadoctors.com/help. You'll see a place where you can subscribe to the newsletter, or you can actually see the archives of the last 10, including last night, since you didn't get it, if you're not a subscriber yet. Or if you're having problems, you have subscribed, and no matter what you do, you can't get it through your ISP's junk mail filter or whatever. They're calling us spammers or whatever, even though you say you want it. It happens. So either sign up for another account, like a Gmail account or something like that, and subscribe through that, or just go and take a look at our newsletter archives.
You want an encrypted Gmail account.
Encrypted Gmail account, which you can do manually, or you can do permanently. Both items, two for one, in this week's newsletter. What's that?
What?
You talking to me?
When?
Hey, you know what we didn't do yet with Lewis?
His segment.
Your segment. Let's see. We've got about a minute.
A whole minute?
Yeah, a whole minute.
All right.
Run real quick. Well, what's going on with your segment?
I've got a great new program that I've been using for the last couple of weeks since the new iPhone came out and the new Apple software. They came out with a program called Remote. And it's a cool little program that lets you use iTunes and Apple TV remotely. It lets you use your iPhone and your iPod Touch as remote control.
So you can actually control the iTunes. So if you're playing like my house, we've got the music plugged in through the audio system, so we start playing.
And it goes through the Wi-Fi network.
Right, so I could have Taylor's
iPod Touch
and say, I don't like that song, I want to go to the next song, and not have to go all the way back to the computer. I could just hit the iPod Touch and it goes to the next song.
Sure, so you're having a party, you want to sit in the backyard, control the audio, control the video. You have everything right in your palm.
Now, the caveat to this is, this is the Mac Life segment. This works only if you have a Mac operating system on your computer.
That was the one that I used. Apparently, there's another one. It was the one I looked at that I researched was a web app. My bad.
Oh, okay.
And the only, like, the you actually have to go to iTunes and...
So is this going to be usable in both the Windows environment and the Mac environment?
It's a little buggy right now. It's a bit nerdy.
Ah.
It's real fun,
yeah.
And it's very easy to install. So if you have the iPhone, you're going to have the apps application on your phone. If you want to add it to your iPod Touch, you can download that in iTunes, and it will add it to your iPod Touch when you synchronize.
But what about configuring it to the iTunes itself?
But when you configure it, I haven't tried it on the Windows platform. I've done it on the Mac platform. The only issues I've seen is every now and then when you go into particular artist or a movie, every now and then it will freeze up on that particular artist or movie, and you have to go back to the home menu.
What do you want for nothing? It's
free.
A free program.
Free.
Exactly.
That's, and
also
it's on the website as
it's
well.
It's on the newsletter. It's also on MacMediaInc.com/radio. Check out those links. All right, let's go to the traffic and weather with Carla Cruz to find out what's going on out there in the really, really warm streets of Phoenix. Well, we hope that somewhere along the line here we were able to give you a thought, an idea, a download, a suggestion, something that might help you in your world of technology. Today's theme is pretty important that everybody really think about this and do a little more research about where in your life encryption comes in. Should I add it, activate it, that type of thing for my... I mean, obviously, we highly recommend that you have it invoked on your home wireless network. Otherwise, anybody, your neighbors, anybody driving by, drive-by hackers, can just connect right up. No problem.
Well, you know what I learned, Ken? I don't want to be that point of least resistance.
There you go. What do you think, Taylor?
It's good. It wasn't a lame joke. I'm
See? All right.
I'm proud of you, truthfully. Right.
Thank you.
I'm swelling in my chest.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Thumping? And bumping?
Not quite thumping.
No. Okay. So, anyway, if you missed any of the show, the resources are posted at datadoctors.com/radio. The audio podcast of the show will be posted whenever Brandon gets back from California, wherever he is. Probably Monday, Tuesday, that type of thing. We are in the iTunes interface, so you can subscribe to it and it becomes a podcast. The bottom line is between email and your... just your internet usage as you're out and about, if you're using Wi-Fi hotspots, and certainly your home network. That's just three areas right there where, I mean, you got to have encryption. You really got to think about that. Those of you that have smartphones, some of them, depending upon what they are, you know, Blackberries, those type of things, I think I'm sure the iPhone has either built-in or third-party applications for encrypting data. And please, put a password on these mobile devices. This is my CNN segment today. You think about iPhone users, BlackBerry users, these people that have these smartphones that have just an enormous amount of information, right? How much information in there that if somebody else got a hold of that and really spent some time looking at that, you know, you got a great iPhone.
Social security number,
whatever.
Birth certificate, bank cards.
Yeah. Whatever you have loaded in there. I don't have that much stuff loaded in mine, but, but there are codes and things that get me into certain... places and devices and things that I have stored. Now, one of the tips that I had, and you wouldn't be able to tell what code went to where on my phone because I purposely created these very cryptic entries in the memos and what have you so that it's not real obvious what these numbers are for. I know what they're for, but if somebody else got this, it wouldn't be that valuable to them.
That's kind of like changing the name on the in the address book when people call you. You don't want other people seeing it.
No, I'm thinking in more in terms of if you put bank PIN number here, you know, somebody steals your phone, or if you lose it, they look and they see an entry in your memos that says bank PIN number, they're going to go right to it.
Oh, that's, yeah, everything says save password on mine.
Yeah. So if it didn't say that, if it said BPN, right, it's not as obvious to somebody that doesn't know your phone, doesn't know who you are, but they look at that at BPN, well, that's no big deal, and it went right past your PIN number, whatever. But again, put the passwords on there. Look at the security settings there. There's encryption built into those devices. There's encryption that you should have activated on your home networking, wireless networks. There's the encryption tip that we gave you for Gmail users. So there's just a plethora of encryption advice and suggestions there at datadoctors.com/radio. Appreciate everybody joining up. Thanks, Lewis, for coming in. How do they get a hold of you during the week if they have a Mac question?
MacMediaInc.com/radio.
Or what's the phone number to the... You got two stores.
We got lots of stores. 480-964-6352.
That's the Mac guy. Call him. Don't call us, because Data Doctors does Windows-based stuff. We'll let Lewis and his guys do the Mac-based stuff. Taylor, thanks for the input.
Welcome.
And watch that tech spectation.
Team sarcasm all day.
We'll see y'all next week. Thanks for joining the Computer Corner.